Growing Up Baby with Haley Zimak.
Hi, and thanks for listening. Katia Maxwell is one of the kindest, most compassionate, and nurturing people I know. Her six children are a testament to that. She has a warmth that immediately puts one at ease and a gentle, listening ear for those who need it. We have a friendship that dates back many years. She was my media mentor when I was just starting out in broadcasting. And her nature lends itself to another important role as well, that of doula and childbirth educator. What has your role as a doula taught you? And I'm thinking things like what you've learned from the experience of being able to guide new life into the world, because truly it must be such a privilege.
It is such a privilege. It's a really heartwarming, very deep connection between the families and myself. And what have I learned? I've learned that everyone's journey is very, very different. You hear that out there in the media and books that you read and shows that you watch, but it's so true. Everyone's experience is so very intimate onto themselves and the relationships that they have around them. And it's taught me that childbirth is this magnificent, joyous, hard work, deep-seated work that women do around the world. It's such an amazing experience to be part of. But I would say, taught me that it's everyone's different, and that it's very hard work, and it's grounding work, and it's intimate work that I'm privileged to be a part of.
Is it satisfying work too for you? Like, does it feed something in you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You know, you think about when I was having my children and the stories that people would exchange, I would think that after a while, you know, one would get used to it, like the obstetrician or the family doctor or the midwife or whomever, it would just become rote, right? One birth after the next. But it doesn't. Each birth is, again, so different. And each birth moves you, or moved me anyway, in a way that I just would never expect. I thought, oh, you know, once, twice, thrice, 20, 30. But every single time it would get me. Every single time it would move me.
And that's a long time we're talking about, because, of course, we've known each other for many years. But when I was doing some research for this podcast, I looked you up on LinkedIn, and you're listed as a doula and a childbirth educator for 27 years. So That's a long time. That's a lot of movement we're talking about.
Yeah. It's been a long time. And, you know, I've definitely peeled back on both, just because of my own age. And as my children get older, the expectations, believe it or not, become a little bit more complex than when they were babies. So it has been a long time, and it's something that I'm very proud of, and something that I feel like I'm making a difference in being part of a family's birth journey.
Can you talk a little bit about, and I was kind of one of those people, when I got pregnant, I just went through the system, right? I was assigned an OB and started going to my appointments, and a friend of mine had a midwife and a doula, and her experience seemed a lot more, and not to say my doctor was great and the appointments were fine, but I felt like she got a lot more care and maybe tenderness and compassion, and they would talk about different things. So from your perspective, just because I wish I had been a little bit more informed, and I know you advocate for informed decision-making, what are the differences between the kind of two paths that you can go when you find out you're pregnant?
I think I would summarize it by saying one is more medicalized, if I could invent a word. So when you go with an OB, or some family physicians still deliver, when you go that route, it's very specific methods and methodology and accepted care, and a different way of thinking and managing the mom-to-be and the family and the birth. It's just, and it's not sterile, it's more formalized.
Yes, formulaic. That's how I remember feeling it. Like, it was very, in, out, measurements, weight. Okay, done.
Yes. Yep. And so they're, you know, they're checking the boxes and they're doing that primary care and they do it well. But then when you look at the other stream, the midwifery stream, even something as simple as the appointments are usually longer than what you would get with your family doctor. The midwives can practice in certain hospitals, but they can also deliver at home. And that's a huge difference between having a doctor or an OBGYN do the deliveries, that opportunity to have a home birth. If you have a hospital birth, the midwives still come out to your home. You know, I think some midwives do it day three, day six, at your house, doing weighing, giving you some support, and then you would have a few in-clinic appointments and then back to your family doctor you go after you're discharged. So it's less formal, it's more gentle. I personally think it's an opportunity to be more responsive specifically to the mother and her support people that she has in her life. It's that one is, I don't want to say impersonal. One is more formal and the other is definitely more personalized. Longer appointments, opportunity to ask a lot of questions. And you, I think you use the word gentle. And I would say, midwifery care feels more gentle, feels more supportive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to be careful because I've worked with some OBGYNs here in town, and they're wonderful. They're awesome. But there's definitely a difference in the journey.
And then in terms, you mentioned aftercare as well. That was one thing I was really envious of when my friend had her, I think her name was Alice, had Alice go to her house after. And I thought, wouldn't it be lovely to stay inside right now? Mm-hmm.
That's just one of the differences, but that's such a huge one, even to be able to labor in your own home, and to be able to go into your own fridge and grab a snack or grab some water or whatever it is that you needed without having to ask or feel like, oh, I shouldn't ask. I shouldn't do this. Can I do that? It's very different when you're in midwifery care. It's a little bit more empowering, I guess, than working with perhaps a more medicalized or formal way of caregiving around pregnancy.
Yeah. So in terms of your advocacy work for informed decision-making model, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean exactly knowing options like this existed? Because other than having you as my friend, but you were in Stratford, I was in Toronto at the time, you know, and I just kind of went into the system quickly and with both eyes shut, like you're holding, you know, going on a roller coaster, right? I just felt very okay, you know, I'm going this route because that's the route my doctor has put me on. And it wasn't until maybe halfway down, I thought, okay, there was a different way of doing this.
Mm-hmm. That informed decision-making piece to me is very important. And I wish there was a way for mothers to be and mothers and fathers to be and partners to be, for them to be able to do some exploratory work where all the information is out there in one spot that you can almost like a pros and cons checklist, you know, so that you can kind of compare what it is.
Like a menu. What items right, do a menu, I want yes. to bring to the table?
Yes, that's right. Because, you know, most people have an idea of how they want the birth to go, whether that's exposure they've had through media or research that they've done or TV shows even that they've watched, right? Things that they feel that they might want as part of their birth and labor journey. And I think it's important that, you know, if we can make that at all available, just on a wide scale level, you know, I don't know how you do that, whether it's through health units or schools or doctor's offices, because there are so many different options at every stage of your pregnancy and labor that a lot of women don't know and their partners don't know. And I wish there was a way for them to know. So when I work with couples or individuals, I'm very not blunt, but I'm straightforward. And this is what's available to you. Answer the questions. There's a lot of fear and anxiety, especially around labor and delivery. So being able to answer those questions honestly, you know, not every birth is perfect. Not everything goes well. Sometimes things go haywire, and everyone has to respond, you know, in an emergent way. But that having the information, being able to review the information, look at what you want as your birth experience, and then moving forward and making the decisions that you want, I think is very important. And then the other side of that is a lot of moms-to-be, the first timers, they're not possibly they're not as confident as they could be. So then they can't really advocate for themselves because they don't have the language, or they might ask once and then they're told no, and they'll take that no as the gospel truth, and then that's it. Yeah, there's, especially when it comes to first-time moms, being able to understand, being able to advocate for yourself, being able to make those decisions, so very critical decisions. I think it's a key to, you know, as positive a birth experience as you can possibly have, having the tools to make those decisions for yourself, you know, my body, my choice kind of thing. And being able to just advocate for yourself. It's tough. It's very difficult, I find. And, you know, maybe it's just the way that we disseminate information around pregnancy and birth. How do we get all the information out to everybody who wants it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a really good point. I remember saying to Ben on more than one occasion, thank goodness I have a strong grasp of the English language. Thank God that when I get told no or get a roundabout answer, I'm able to push. Thank God I don't get, you know, embarrassed speaking up for what I want, because there were so many times. And as someone who hadn't really dealt with the medical system a whole lot, I was getting a little bit discouraged because I didn't always feel like I was listened to. And that's just such an unfair experience for people who can't advocate for themselves, and it is their first time.
Mm-hmm. It's such a strange experience because women have been giving birth for forever, of course. Doctors and midwives and doulas, we've all been working in this area and supporting moms to be for forever. And still there's the information is not delivered in a way that people can just ingest it, understand it, and then move forward making the decisions that best match with what they want to happen for their labor and delivery experience. Mm-hmm. It strikes me as still surprising that we just haven't figured out a way to, you know, make sure that information is getting out there and allowing individuals to advocate for themselves, to be able to say no, to be able to ask questions. To me, it's so bizarre that it's just not widespread. The information just, you know, like a snap should be out there, but it's not. You have to dig for it and ask questions and ask more questions.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned off the top that every birth that you're present at is different. The experience is different, but I'm wondering about some of the commonalities that you experience. And I think you mentioned earlier about there's fear and anxiety around labor, especially. I remember thinking that I was going to die, literally, that I wasn't going to be able to handle it. So in all your years of doing this, what are those top fears, anxieties, and what can you say to allay some of them?
The top fear is pain. Everyone's watched television and everyone has watched a woman give birth on television, and the screaming and the pain and you know, this the heavy kind of negative connotation to what labor and delivery looks like. I find that's a commonality. Most couples, most women that are giving birth, they've had that exposure and they're terrified, absolutely terrified of the pain. That would be number one. You know, I don't like any pain. I don't like any discomfort. I can take it all. I manage this. I manage that, you know, either way, but there's still anxiety around pain. What happens when you say you have this fear going in of this pain, and anxiety around it? I talk to couples about breathing. It sounds so lame, but breathing can really help and make a difference. Movement and finding comfortable positions to labor in, walking, rocking, sitting on the ball, doing the slow dance with your partner, and then breathing through the contractions. So I acknowledge the pain and I say, you know what, you're right, it hurts, and it hurts like nothing you've ever felt before. Probably, most likely, for like 99.999% of us, it hurts like nothing we've ever felt before. And so how are we going to deal with that? This is what we'll deal with. This is what we'll try. And how does that work for you? And this is what your support person can do. And this is what your doula will do. And this is what you can do. And along the journey of managing the pain and dealing with that part of labor and delivery, there are, yes, some other options available to you, like gas, or, you know, there are some, I think it's Demerol. I don't know if they use that anymore. I'm aging myself there. And then, of course, the epidural. So, you know, there's different opportunities available for you, and whatever you choose, you choose. Whichever one you decide, okay, yes, give me that, or okay, I've had enough, give me that. That is a choice that you make, and there's nothing wrong with that. And you won't be judged for that. Your support people will support you. Your doula, your nurse, your doctor, they'll all support you. And I would hope that women feel empowered to make those choices and do go with whatever matches, you know, their own experience. But that pain is number one. Everybody, that's the commonality. Everybody's terrified of the actual delivery portion of their birthing experience. And then the other commonality is the love that flows from everybody in the room, whether it's at the hospital or at home. There's this love that flows as this new life enters into the world. And it has such a impact to realize that you've just brought this new little person into the world. So those are the two things, the pain and the amount of love that's in the room when a child is born.
So the love erases the pain is what you're saying, right? Because I don't know about you, but I can't remember the pain, but I still have the love.
Yeah, no, I would actually, yeah, upon reflection, I would agree with you. Yeah, I don't remember I mean, I know I went through it. I know there was some crazy moments. Yeah. But the love remains. Yeah. And that's why people have more than one.
Well, we'll see.
Right? Oh, I forget. Oh, yes, I remember now.
So what would you say when you're working with these individuals or couples? And of course, the end result is to have a successful pregnancy, a healthy baby. But you also speak about no judgment and kind of meeting people where we're at, where they're at. And that can include, you know, certain habits or lifestyle choices. So in your experience, are there any key takeaways? I don't want to say you must do this or you must not do that, but can we even distill it like that? That is really important to adhere to, or some of those recommendations that, you know, they're really not so, they're not so bad, like eating sushi, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You type into the search engine, can I, and then whatever question you have around your pregnancy, and there's, you know, immediately a million papers out there or hits out there to answer your question. So the big part, I think, is for you to really sit back and reflect on what is it that you want? What is it that you're hoping for? What is it that you want for your baby, for yourself, for your family? And then you take all those recommendations and you are going to pick and choose what best resonates with you and the experience that you want. You know that you need to be healthy. You know that you need to eat healthy. You know you need to look after yourself. If you're not getting any exercise, can you go out for short walks? Is there anything that you can do? Watch what you're eating, you know, make sure that they're happy calories, not harmful calories. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to gorge on, you know, a dish of ice cream because I'm having a craving for ice cream and pickles and cheese all mixed together, which is really disgusting. you know, so it's looking at everything that's out there and choosing what matches with you, what resonates with you. Asking questions when you don't understand, you know, pushing back a little bit when you actually still don't understand the question that you've been given, or the answer that you've been given. So that's for kind of like the pregnancy part, finding out what works for you, your partner, your family, and making sure you're looking out for yourself and for babe. And then when it comes to labor and delivery, again, what is it that you want? What matches with you? What makes sense for you? Do you want to have the child at home? Would you like to have the child at the hospital? Are you going to have an OBGYN? Are you going to have a midwife? Will you have a doula? So looking at those options and then picking the ones that match with you, that resonate with you. And then after you have the baby, then it's those first 6 weeks that are critical. And I tell friends and family and people that I'm supporting, you know, those first 6 weeks are for you. And if you have a partner, for you and your partner. And you get people lined up to cook for you, to do laundry for you, to hold the baby so that you can sleep, hold the baby so you and your partner can sleep, hold the baby so you and your partner can get out of the house and go for a walk. The first 6 weeks is critical for, you know, the family to bond, this newfound family to bond. And it's important that both of them get rest, that mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad, that everybody, you know, gets the support and the rest that they require and need. Because those first 6 weeks, those are wicked, man. People don't tell you the kind of exhaustion that you are going to feel those first 6 weeks. You know, we've seen everyone on TV be tired and dragging their feet, but the first 6 weeks are tough. So,
well, and your body's been ripped out too. Like,
yes, it has.
Yeah. Don't get up there. Just like nothing I've ever experienced.
No. And no one can describe it. It is impossible to describe being pregnant and then labor and then delivery and then postpartum, what you're going through. I would say so across all of those areas, it's asking the questions that you need to ask, making sure you understand the answer, and asking again and again until you do. Looking after yourself, number one, because you're the mom and you're carrying this creature inside you. You need to be happy and healthy. And then number three, the family unit itself, as they begin their new journey, that they have the tools and the support and someone who's going to knock on the door and drop them off some curry or drop them off some lasagna or come in and do a load of laundry or, you know, come in and do some vacuuming and leave. Don't sit and chat with us. Just come in, do your stuff. Thank you very much and carry on.
Well, didn't you suggest actually putting I'm sure it was you and I, we were talking and you said, put a note on the door, you know, and you can do this, like you can come in and do the dishes or you can come in and do the laundry. I mean, I never did the note, but I appreciate like the sentiment.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. I do. You're right. I do put a note on the door and essentially says you're welcome. Come on in. But you're here to help and support this new family. You're not here to talk to them and keep them up when they need it, when they really want to have a nap. You can take the baby so they can have a nap. You can take the baby and bath the baby so that they can just be with each other and chat with each other or have their own time. Yeah. And the note on the door can either be actually a real one on the door, or prior to labor and delivery, you let your support people know, this is what I expect from you. This is what we think we want from you. Okay. And this is what you can do to help support us. Everyone wants to see the baby. Yes, you will see the baby. Maybe not day one, maybe not day 10, maybe day 31. But that's what the family needs and requires. But there is nothing that prepares you for the exhaustion or the joy that you will feel bringing this beautiful human being into the world. Nothing can prepare you for it.
Yeah, it's so true. I've spoken to a couple American guests on this podcast, and 6 weeks to us seems like nothing, right? Especially someone like me who was privileged enough to take 18 months off. So when you talk about those first 6 weeks, and you and I have talked about this a little bit, kind of in the Western world, our Western culture doesn't really allow for outsiders and for the village. And someone like you with lineage, family lineage from Guyana, how do you think that hurts us that we don't have, let's say, a collective of women or supporters around us to care for us for as long as we need to recover?
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. It's very sad that we live in a society where we are compartmentalized, where labor and delivery still happens in hospital. Hospitals where people go when they're sick or when they're dying. It's not a place where we would go to celebrate birth. So just our system from the very core of itself, it leans away from, it takes a village to raise a child, leans away from the women in the family come and nurture the younger women in the family. And then that next generation of women in the family nurture that next generation of women in the family. Like that doesn't, our system doesn't allow for it. And I think that we are worse for that. There are moms out there on their own trying to figure this stuff out. And it's big. It's huge, yeah, having a baby and looking after that. And so in terms of the westernized approach to it takes a village, unfortunately, it's just it's not something that naturally happens, that we naturally come by. It takes work to make that happen. And I think, you know, you mentioned my Guyanese background. I'm fortunate to come from a culture where the matriarch is a strong person in the family lineage. And so I had my aunties, I had my mom. And then, you know, when my children, if they have children, then I will pass along that same supportive mix. But I do think that it's unfortunate that that doesn't happen naturally in our society over here in our hemisphere. And I do believe that it does. It puts women at a disadvantage, and that I really, really wish that there was a solution for, but it definitely makes a huge difference on, again, on our side of the planet and how women go through pregnancy, labor, and birth.
I've had consultants on the podcast as well, and this is something you and I have spoken about to some degree. And, you know, while I found them very helpful, I know from your point of view, and as you've just said, women have been having babies for how many years? Do you think in a way then we've lost some of our instincts in this modern technological society? And is this something that we can and should be tapping into when everything is so accessible at our fingertips as well? I don't know. It's kind of like a catch-22, right? These things exist, so we take advantage of them. But then is that dampening our own natural instincts? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does make sense. The thing is with the information, all the information that's out there at our fingertips is that there's a lot of misinformation as well. And there's a lot of wording that causes anxiety. Oh, this is going to happen. Oh, that's going to happen. Something as simple as, you know, when you're giving birth, doing the perineal massage to try and avoid getting rips and tears, or, you know, you're going to get torn open, you're going to need stitches. Like, you can find that stuff on the internet, and that would absolutely petrify me. So there's this, it is a catch-22. You've got all that information out there, but some of that information is absolutely terrifying, and you don't know what you can do with it or what you should do with it, or how do you filter that through? How do you process what it is that you're looking at and what you're reading? And I think that instinctual part of who we are as women has been pushed down. It has been dampened down. And I'm in the media, so I don't want to point my finger at myself, but the media is very good at portraying things that are natural and maternalistic and feminine as weaknesses, you know, things that don't, how do I put it? It's almost like, you know, boys don't cry, but it applies to all that is feminine, right? You don't have to go through this with labor and delivery. You shouldn't have to go through that. And so then you end up in some cases where women are, you know, asking for a C-section, which is a very serious surgery. You know, when you reflect on what's happening and what's happening to you, it's not like, you know, getting a wart burned off or something like that, or ripping a Band-Aid off. It's big, it's major, major surgery. And so I think on one side, you have all that information available to you, all the information at your fingertips. It's some of it can be very negative and can be frightening. And then that diminishes the instinctual response that we would have as a woman in westernized countries where there is no village. There aren't, you know, women in the family. That matriarchal strength and power is not available to you. And I mean, Haley, even with the dance that the baby does inside our body, as the baby turns and repositions and moves, and how as the contractions work to push that baby out. And again, that dance, a few more steps of the dance, and then another push, and then a few more steps of the dance and coming around the corners. Even that part is so intricate and intimate. And yet we really have no idea that that's what's going on, you know, inside our bodies. We think there's the baby and we're just going to push that sucker out and that's it. Mm-hmm. But there's so much detail in what's actually going on inside of us. And if we could tap into that, if there was a way to pull out our instincts as we're, you know, doing labor and delivery, I think it might be a very, very different experience for many of us. And it would enhance the beauty of something that has become, you know, a little sterile, whether it's midwifery or obstetrician, you know, that intimacy in that moment, the intimacy of giving birth. I never thought of it that way. But when you say, is it dampening down our instincts in some way? I would have to say, yeah, yeah, the detail, the intimacy of what's going on has been lost. I don't think very many of us really stop and reflect on, and I like to call it the dance between mom and child as labor and delivery is going on.
I love that. Yeah. And listening and feeling.
Yeah. And that we can do it. We've been doing it for forever and a day. Our bodies were built to do it. You can absolutely do this. You can work through the labor and the contractions, and you're a powerhouse. We're women. We hold this child sacred space for 9 months, and then we're fire on all engines to deliver this baby out into the world. We're amazing. We are absolutely amazing, and it's a beautiful journey, and it's a beautiful gift that the mother gives to the child and the child gives to the mother.
I love that. I would like to get your thoughts on this. So this is something I was kind of hearing a lot of. You hear that you're really never ready to become a parent. You'll never feel prepared enough. Your financial situation isn't going to be exactly where you want it, or there's careers or other things to consider. What do you think about that? Do you think that, you know, you just make it work with parenthood, or in your experience, are there certain benchmarks that you should really strive to meet before bringing someone into the world?
Yeah, there's two sides to that particular coin, Haley. The parent in me would want to parent my children and say, make sure you've got your ducks in a row, make sure that you're financially stable, that you have the income it requires to raise a child. Make sure that you're in a space that is comfortable to raise a child. Make sure that in your relationship, you're comfortable and in a position to raise a child. So there's that parent side of me that would say, absolutely, check off those boxes, man. Before you go down that road, make sure you've got those boxes checked off. And then the other side is, how do you possibly prepare for something that is a complete unknown experience onto you and onto the rest of the world that has had children? Like, just because someone has 6 children doesn't mean they know what they're doing, or they have all the right answers, or that they were prepared, or that their experience is any different than someone who's got all those boxes checked. So, you know, yes, absolutely, make sure that you're ready. And then no, absolutely, there's no way that you can make sure that you're ready. I don't think there's going to be the right time, the right place, the right age to get pregnant and start a family. I think that we do ourselves a disservice by putting that kind of pressure on individuals. Some people will be able to check those boxes and get everything all ready. Some people get a surprise, or some people are like, you know what, we're just going to forge ahead because we're tired of waiting. So all three of those scenarios exist, and all three of those scenarios are possible. And all three of those scenarios take the exact same amount of energy and strife and anxiety and push power. They're all out there in their own peace, existing in everyone's lives, as they should. But to say to oneself, I'm going to wait until, I don't know that that's entirely possible. And I don't know how you define that until. I think you can be more, you know, established. But I wouldn't say that you should wait for that either, because that may never happen. And then if you know that you want to have a child and you think you need to be established because that's what someone has told you, or that's what you've observed, then you may never have a child, and then you'll miss out on that experience. So it is that double-edged sword about being prepared or just forging ahead. Both work, both exist.
Yeah. And I think it's a matter of, not that everything falls into place per se, because there's no magic wand here, but maybe it's more realistic to say that you consciously and mindfully shift those puzzle pieces and put it all together so it works the way it needs to work.
Mm-hmm. You don't have any other choice. You've got this new creature that you're holding in your arms and you're looking down, and what's your choice? Right? Your choice is to forge ahead and learn as you go and make your mistakes and realize that, oof, you know, that brand of diaper, I'm not going to go with that. Maybe I'll try cloth, because maybe I can afford cloth a little bit better. Yeah. I don't think there's any way to ever absolutely prepare yourself for having this new life in your life. I think there are things that you can do to perhaps mitigate some circumstances. But if you're saying to yourself, I have to make sure boxes number 1, 2, and 3 are checked before I have a family, you may be setting yourself up to not have a family. And where are you getting that from? Who's telling you that you have to check those boxes? Why do you need those boxes checked? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, if you are living on the edge of life, perhaps, you know, having a child is something that you should consider putting off until you're a little bit more established.
Yeah.
Right. But sometimes you don't have a choice. The baby comes.
Yeah. Yep. So as an excellent mother to 6 extremely lovable, intelligent, kind, sweet, independent, you know, insert complimentary adjective here. Would you say you did anything vastly different between number 1 and number 2, or were you guided by instinct? How did you figure it out?
I guess for me, in reflecting on having these 6 children, I still haven't got it right. If I had a 7th child, I would still be making mistakes. But from each child to the next, I perhaps learned to be a little bit different in how I would approach, you know, maybe I'm not going to, this is really simple. Let's look at baths. You know, maybe with my first one, I gave him a bath every single day because I thought that that's what I had to do. And then by child number 2, I realized, no, maybe I could do it every other day, or I can just do a top and tail and give them a bath on the 3rd day. Not that I did that, but just to give you an idea of the little things that perhaps worked with number 1, I tried them with number 2. If they worked well with number 1 and 2, I tried them with number 3. But every child is so different. Those 6 are so different from each other. You know, one wanted to breastfeed for X number of years. The other one, you know, was finished with me when he was 18 months. He's like, I'm done with the breast. And off he went, while others breastfed for a little bit longer. So there's not necessarily like a recipe or a tip sheet that I got from child to child, because again, they were also different. But the one thing I know that they all responded to was touch and love, and being seen, even at, you know, 2 days old, 2 weeks old, 2 months old, 2 years old, 20 years old, is being loved and being seen. And that is the one consistent thing that I did with each child. And when I look at them now as adults, they know they're loved and they know that they're seen. And I think that's probably part of the healthy relationship that they have with each other and that I have with them. Not that it's been perfect every time. Mm-mm, absolutely not. There are days where I would have liked to, you know, throw them outside. But the one consistent piece is the depth of that love that you share with that infant, making sure that I continue that throughout their childhood and into their adulthood. But from child to child, Haley, there are no tips there, because they're too different.
Yeah. So no magic answers then, right?
You just gotta forge ahead and forge through it. Like everything about each one of them was different. when they slept, when they ate, what they ate, what they liked to eat, you know, when they breastfed, when they were finished with me, when they were toilet trained, like every single one of them was different.
And I think that's good advice because, and I'm only have one who's under two, but even now I've learned you have to be adaptable and you have to just be ready to change on a dime. So what worked yesterday, unfortunately didn't work today. And okay, that's not going to work for the next 6 weeks. So how do we regroup and move forward? Because I found myself getting really frustrated, really annoyed. This is particularly around sleep. You know, I would just think, but you just slept through the night, right? Like you were giving me 10, 11 hours. Why are we down to 8 or 9 hours? Well, I have to look at myself and say, you only need 8 hours. So I have to adjust my bedtime and my expectations now moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no magic pill. There's no textbook. There's nothing that you can flip through to say for situation A, here's response A. For situation B, here's response B. There's no such thing. As long as you keep them contextually, you look at this person as a person. It doesn't matter if they're 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, or 20. They are a person first. And so we should treat them like a person first with love and care and tenderness and support. And absolutely, you know, be exhausted, be angry. Think about tossing them out the window. Just don't toss them out the window, right? I remember the doctor when I had my first pregnancy, I was, you know, worried about the thoughts and stuff that I was having because I was exhausted. And he said, by all means, have the thoughts, have as many thoughts as you want. Just don't act on them. And I felt such a relief because I thought, oh, everybody's feeling this exhausted. There is no textbook. I don't suck as a mom. I'm not. These thoughts are nothing for me to feel guilty about. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. You know, and then you're going to make mistakes. And yes, the child is going to suddenly go from sleeping through the night to not sleeping through the night, from wanting to nurse heavily to not wanting to nurse heavily, to liking beans to despising beans. And yes, you're going to have to flip on a dime and switch it out and respond. But the main piece is remember that they are a person first and your child and a child second. And you treat them with the respect and the admiration that you would treat your friends with, your adult friends with. Just because they're tiny doesn't mean that they get to be dismissed or talked down to or treated less than. They're a person first and treat them with love and respect. And yeah, pivot, man, and keep pivoting and being open to pivot. Go out for drinks with your friends and complain about your child. Come back home and pick up the job again, right? Pass that baby off to a partner or a friend and say, you know what? I'm done. I'm going out for an hour and just here, take this thing. I'm gone, right? That's all part of the journey, man. It's all part of the journey.
Thank you so much for your time. As a doula, as a friend, as a, you know, fellow woman, you spend months with someone, right? You spend 9 months, 10 months, 11, 12 going through this journey. Do you have kind of a phrase or anything that you share with them when you part ways?
Mm-hmm. I guess the most significant piece would be to remember that there is no perfect mom, if that's what you're calling yourself. There's no perfect dad, if that's what you're calling yourself. There's no perfect way of raising an infant, child, teen, an adult. You do the best that you can do. Or sometimes you're not doing the best that you can do because you're just tired or you've had enough or whatever. But this pressure that we put on ourselves and the pressure that we put on our children, like playing Mozart when they're in utero, or reading to them so that, you know, their neurons and neuropathways, and they end up being these brilliant young people. That's too much pressure. And enjoy the love, enjoy the moment. It goes by so fast. It's crazy. My eldest is 34, my youngest is 19, and I remember them as babies just yesterday. So don't put the pressure on yourself. You can't be perfect. You won't be perfect. Look at your mistakes. Learn from them. Keep that baby, you know, safe and warm and loved, and keep yourself safe and warm and loved. and you'll be okay. You'll journey through together and you'll be okay. But don't try to achieve the unachievable. Just love each other. Be warm, be gentle. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please download, subscribe, follow, and share. Until next time.